So today I'm here with Nick Yang. Nick has founded and built a couple of companies. I mean, his office is just, I guess, in Beijing, but kind of like just a little bit outside of Beijing. And maybe, Nick, why don't you just tell us a little bit about who you are and where you come from?
Okay, well, I consider myself a professional entrepreneur, and that's my job, it's, as an entrepreneur. The current we're issuing is in the office of my third company. So I'm 34 years old, and I'm starting my third company. The first company I started is in 1999, and that's where the story got started. Is that in 1999, I graduated from Stanford in 99, and you know, in 1999, it's the year which 20% of the graduating class actually went to startups. Hmm. That's just simply amazing, right? I mean, considering the graduating class of Stanford.
Right.
That was the year, 1999, and we decided, the dot-com time. So what we decided to do is that we decided to come to China to start a company. And that was
so you left Silicon Valley to come to China, and
yes,
then the peak of Silicon Valley when China was like just getting started.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That was very rare, and even my parents don't understand why I'm going back to China.
It sounds kind of insane, honestly, back then, because everything Silicon was, I was in Silicon Valley, and that was when Silicon Valley was big.
It was very big, and Yahoo was trading at over $300 a share, and eBay was like the biggest thing on the market at the time.
And you said, I'm going back to Beijing.
I'm going back to Beijing. And that was pretty insane. And before we left, actually, an interesting anecdote is that a friend of mine is a good friend of Larry Page, and we went to their office in University of Avenue. There was 9 guys at Google, and they were just starting up, and we had lunch together. And they said they would treat us because they just got funding.
Oh.
They just got $25 million from.
So they went small by then. They just got their kind of open money.
Yes.
They were already making a pretty big impact. They were the hottest startup back then.
Hottest startup was 9 guys.
Yeah.
It was quite amazing, but still only 9 employees for Google. Just imagine. I mean, it was that was the thing. And actually, we had lunch with them. A couple weeks later, we took a plane and we went back to China.
And you came back to what?
We actually came to Tsinghua because that's where we're sitting at. Myself, my partners, Yufan Zhou and Zhou Shen.
So you have three Chinese guys.
Three Chinese guys.
Oh, Zhou Shen.
Zhou Shen was Pacific, you know?
I haven't met him, I don't know him.
Okay. Yeah, Zhou Shen and myself and Yufan Zhou.
And so all of you have been living up in Silicon Valley?
We all graduated from Stanford and same here.
Okay.
Nine. So we were the Stanford team in Beijing.
Right.
Zhou's MBA and myself and Yufan were engineering students in the W program. So we went back. And we got funding from Andrew Masters.
Before you go on, what drove you to come back? I mean, why not stay in the U.S.? I don't completely understand that. I mean, you made it through the U.S. system pretty well. Why come back to China?
The
book country, okay, big potential, but...
Yeah. I think it was a third world country. No,
and funding and things like that. Did you have what kind of family did you come from China? Did you have a lot of family connections? Was it kind of easy to raise capital, that kind of stuff?
No, we actually raised capital from the States, from our classmates. That's where our story is very interesting, is that we raised $250,000 from about 20 students. Our classes, some MBAs, some engineering students, and some guys were richer with more family money. Mm. They put in about $20,000. Mm. Some put in a few thousand dollars. So we have about 20 investors.
Mm. So your family friends?
Basically friends. Basically friends. Basically family friends.
Did your family come from money and connections in China?
No. My dad went to the States in 1983 on government money.
Mm.
Well, the government sent him to study in the States, study engineering, and he graduated with a PhD program in Wisconsin.
Right.
When he was actually working a long time, then got his PhD. Then we ended up staying in China, in the States.
So what drove you to go back? I mean, you obviously want to succeed. The U.S. is a pretty good environment for creating entrepreneurs. Why go back to China?
Because we went back to China in 1998, prior to our graduation in 1999, with Yunfan Zhou and Zhou Qian. We went back because one of Yunfan's family friends actually wanted him to work for him. He owns a big company in China.
Mm.
And he said, come back to China, this is a great opportunity. And we went back, we saw what's going on in China, and we decided that instead of working for him, why don't we just start our own thing? So that's how.
So you come back, and then you finish studying, and then
finished studying, and we decided to come back.
What did you feel back then?
We felt that everything was a spontaneous life. I mean, everything is it's almost like spring, you know, right, with all the little plants shooting new leaves.
But you hadn't felt that when you lived here before, had you?
No. I felt that we're at the brink of a big, tremendous opportunity. Mm. And we were at the brink of a tidal wave.
Yeah.
That's what we call it. We call it a tsunami.
Right.
And we're like surfers looking for a big wave.
Right.
And we felt that the wave was coming. And we just had to get in front of it.
So even though Silicon Valley was big, you felt it was bigger in China?
We felt it was bigger in China.
I mean, I've noticed in my 2.5 weeks in China, I feel now that communist China is more capitalist than the U.S. The capitalist drive here is incredibly strong. And that might sound a little bit shocking, but I'm very convinced on that point.
They call it the communism with the Chinese characteristics.
Yeah, well, I think China is pretty... I'm not like it. I really like it. I think they're very capitalistic and driven and entrepreneurial. I think it's excellent.
It's very, very entrepreneurial here, yes. And China, I think there's the leadership understand that there's phases to a way that the nation develops. For example, then America is becoming more socialist with higher taxes, more social welfare benefits. I mean, if you look at Obama, who changed the tax code, right? So it's becoming more and more socialist. I think China will go probably the same way. You develop market economy, you develop GDP, you develop people's economic lives, then put in social programs, put in more welfare. And with the President Hu Jintao, who said the harmonious society. So we're also turning more socialist.
In time.
That might take another 10 years. It might take another 10 years. I think when GDP is probably going to surpass Japan in the next 1 or 2 years.
Yeah,
and with 8%, they said it will surpass the United States in 15 years.
That's if we can all hold together, right? I mean, this is there's a lot of pressure under the surface, too.
Trickle down economics, right? Whether the money will trickle down. I think the leadership will understand that to build a harmonious society, the money has to trickle down.
The interesting analogy I heard was that China's a little bit like the Roman Empire. Like, it's a big empire holding a big region together. And that's not easy to do.
No, it's not easy to do. Because China's so big and so diverse.
Yeah. All right, so let's go on. You come back to China, you got three guys. Seems like they might be good guys. You got 250 grand in French capital. And what?
Then we went back and we need people. So we went to Tsinghua. We said, where's the best engineers? And you might actually graduate from Tsinghua. I was a bachelor before going to Stanford. And which I graduated from the University of Michigan. That's where I grew up in Michigan. So that's where that's how the story goes. So Yunfan said, the best engineers in China is in Tsinghua. So, and he said, okay, I got some connections in school. My old professors and old classmates, some of them are still here. And let's go knock on doors. So we went to the dormitories of the computer engineering department. So that's where our student was. And we started knocking doors. Just look at the open doors, we started knocking. And we said, okay, you guys are computer engineers. Okay, we're a company from Stanford. We're Stanford graduates, and we're starting an internet company. Do you guys want to work for us? And some students
were like, what, Stanford, or did they know?
No, of course not. What Stanford is. But they were like, wow, this is something we only heard of. I mean, we're saying stuff that they only met about.
Right.
So they're like, this is very, very cool and very interesting. So a lot of students responded and they decided to work for us. So we had to find a place outside of Tsinghua where the students can go work and go back to the classroom.
Tsinghua, just so that people have a point of reference, this is pretty much one of China's top universities, right?
This is a top engineering university in China.
I mean, I've never heard of it. It's a massive complex. It looks
Tsinghua is the biggest. Yeah, it's the biggest university in China.
Yeah.
So basically we set up shop and outside Tsinghua so students can take classes well from us. So we built a community site with the students.
And the community site?
It's what's called China Ren. And it's a combination of China, which is the English name for China, Ren, which is the Chinese pronunciation for people. So this is a site for Chinese people. And it's a fusion from the East and West, and which our Western background, Western education, and the Chinese culture, Chinese philosophy. So
your friends in the States that invested, how they do on your investment?
The valuation, which we invested in $257 for 25% of the company, and we sold for $35 million, so 35 times.
Nice. So that's what they were having.
Actually, when we sold to Sohu, we actually traded with stocks, so it was a stock swap. So for $35 million of Sohu stocks, which went up to, I think, 10 times.
Oh, really?
Yeah, went up 10 times since the time we sold. So if they kept their stock today, it will be worth, our company valuation will be $350
million. Oh, wow.
So there will be 350 times. So $10,000 would be $3.5
million. Yeah. Did someone hold?
Someone held to $30, $40. So it will say, let's see, maybe how many times? Five times. So someone will held to 50 times. So
and that's how most of them got out.
It depends various times, right? You get out. The worst you can get out would be about, let's see, 10 times, 10 banger. So what's on our $10,000?
So you have a few friends at Stanford as well, then, I guess.
Our friends will call us. It's like, especially the friends who lock up our shares and forgot where they are and found them.
Oh, really?
Many years later. They will say that. It's like, they thought it was a risky investment. Right. So they didn't care about it. So they locked them in some safe somewhere or some drawers.
Right.
And it was some drawers and figured out, wow, this is a lot of money.
So they made more than I still have it.
Yeah, I didn't have a lot of touch for a while.
Maybe
some of them are still out there.
So you saw that company, Sohu, was one of like Yahoo or somewhere in China. It's almost a conglomerate now. So you did pretty well. Why didn't you just go and like try and leap something?
Actually, after we sold to Sohu, we're at the bottom of the internet age. Right? The first followers in the year 2000, I think most people in the States remember this, is our stock price has just plummeted. So we ended up in Sohu for a year and a half, very depressed, because the entire marketing industry is depressing. So after, in year 2002, we saw this new tidal wave coming out. Remember, we're surfers.
Right.
So whenever there's a wave, you can be sure we're going to get in front of it. And this wave is mobile. We have realized that mobile wave will be bigger, even bigger than the internet wave. And still we're at the beginning of it, still today, that we decided to start another company. And the company is called Kongzhou.
How did you get funding this time?
How did we get funding this time? We're trying to get funding in the year 2002. It was very, very tough.
Right.
Because all VCs are just coming off the first bubble.
Right.
So nobody wanted to invest. even with our backgrounds, Stanford, built a community company, sold a community company, executive of a public company.
Right, I mean, it's just probably heard.
Yeah, from VC probably heard, and we were rejected by so many VCs. You can't even imagine. Going everywhere, people just saying no.
Right.
And it ended up that only one leading VC decided that we're the one, it's DFJ.
Oh, really?
DFJ.
Who did you work with?
We actually had a Stanford alum called Zhang Fan. Zhang Fan is, he was an associate at DFJ.
All right.
And he saw us.
He's in Nevada?
Well, he's very hot now. He's kind of the VC industry.
Right.
So he saw us. He said, I don't guess we'll make it. Just wait, let me convince my bosses at DFJ that we're looking at you. And because DFJ didn't want to invest us, they were very cautious. Everyone was cautious.
Right.
And he went back to Silicon Valley, and he spent 2 weeks convincing his bosses to invest in us.
Mm.
I don't know how he did it, but he didn't be able to convince them.
Mm.
He put his job on the line. Right. That's what he told us. Right. He put his job on the line. I'm betting my career, my job on these guys. So in the end, they invested $3 million out of, let's see, so for 33%. So
that's right. Could you not have self-funded by that point?
What?
Could you not have self-funded?
No, couldn't. Because,
I mean, you come out selling a company that...
$35 million, but with liquidity preference, you know, without that, the entrepreneur didn't, the entrepreneur, what's the term? The entrepreneurs didn't get very much. The investor made money. We didn't make money.
Oh, so you didn't actually make much money on the first one?
No, we made $500,000. Yeah. We each winning
$250,000.
Yeah. So we self-funded $500,000 on this deal. So we raised $3 million for 32%, and that's the only round we raised.
Yeah.
And we went public after we went around the fundraising.
Yeah.
And we went public in 2 years and 2 months from the inception of the company. That was
so you started, you went basically straight to Series A. You didn't do any kind of angel investment or anything. The reason why you went straight to a $3 million round?
Well, we put in $5,000 when we started in May. I put down two. And then we raised the funding in November,
right,
$3 million.
Right.
And we went public 2 years later.
Right, so pretty quick.
That was pretty good. And it was basically some $9 million valuation by the time we money, the time we, no, almost money, $6 million free.
Right.
So by the time, a year and a half later, we went public.
Hmm.
I think it was $350 million.
Hmm.
So that was
kind of a roller coaster for lots
of people. Roller coaster,
hmm.
We went back to IPO price. I know we have about $350 to $500 million.
Do you still hold a lot of stock in the company?
I hold 16%.
So okay. If people buy the stock and push it up, you're okay with that.
What?
If people buy the stock and push it up, you're okay with that.
Of course, 16%. I'm still a big shareholder.
Hmm. And you're still related to that company, right? You're just being a cut from that.
I'm still related from the company. Yes. Yes, I'm still related.
I mean, what way are you related?
Who am I related? Well, I'm the founder.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the vice chairman.
So you're actively still working there?
Not as actively
right.
as before, yes. I'm involved in other companies.
Okay, we'll definitely get to that.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about what Hongzhong does?
What Hongzhong does? Hongzhong is a company in the mobile internet business.
Mm-hmm.
We're the largest player in the mobile internet business in China. A business called Wireless Value Added Services,
mm-hmm.
which is like premium SMS, ringtones, local image channels, mobile games, mobile communities, etc., etc. So
a lot of it's all web-based, is it?
No, it's not only web-based, it's mobile-based, that's what we call it.
And so mobile. Where does revenue come from?
Revenue comes from revenue sharing from the operators. So we work with major telco operators in China, China Mobile, China Unicom, China Telecom.
Mm-hmm.
These are the telcos.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. And another revenue source is through advertising, mobile advertising. That's another thing we do.
Right.
So we can direct payments from major brands.
So you've got U.S. education and you're building businesses here in China. I mean,
yeah.
That must give you quite a heads up.
In the beginning, yes, because of the information asymmetry between the U.S. and China, that we have a lot of advantages. So we see how things are done in the U.S., we adapted to China, and we can do very well. That was 1999. And right now, we see the information flow so freely on the internet, I mean, especially on technology, on business, on these type of activities. So a lot of the Chinese entrepreneurs actually can't be have as the same worldview as us, so we have less of an advantage.
Hmm. So you might bring on the big firewall and lock stuff so that you can get that advantage back, right?
No, I mean, it doesn't last the business aspects.
But now, and so you, one of the guys that you mentioned, you started your first company with, is Joe Chan,
yeah.
who is now running,
what I understood, is
one of the top Chinese internet ventures.
Yeah.
What's he doing now?
Yufan Zhou is my partner,
mm-hmm.
and we started Kung Fu together.
Okay. I mean, are you guys forming your own little PayPal mafia here or something?
What do you
mean? Well, I mean, you know, the PayPal mafia from Silicon Valley.
So
there's all the guys who founded PayPal and worked with PayPal in the early days.
Uh-huh.
They understand viral marketing better than each other. They've made a bunch of money. They've been kind of stuck there. So out of PayPal's come YouTube. There's like 20 companies that have made PayPal.
Okay. They're all friends together, right? And
yeah, that's pretty good. And it's called PayPal mafia. It sounds a little bit like...
A lot of companies, well, it's really like the early days, 1999, when we started the companies.
Mm.
So a lot of the guys are very, very smart and very innovative,
right?
Went to the early startups, so these went out and spiraled.
Hmm.
The biggest company that's grown out the most companies, even most public companies, is Sohu. WeChat also, right, sort of. So, and Yuhu used to be the president for Sohu. And Elon, Li Zhang, Tang Yang, used to be the CEO of Sohu, which Elon also public company. Who else? A lot of companies.
Actually,
it's a small one. So you guys all know each other. Yeah, well, in
China, all the internet people know each other. Yeah, it's actually a pretty small community that guys did that, wasn't it?
It is.
I mean, that's my understanding. Is that right? Because they're mainly around a couple of cities, Beijing, Shanghai, a couple of others around.
Well,
each other.
Yeah. So it's the Chinese internet mafia. Xianghu means ocean rivers. No, lazy rivers. Well, lazy rivers are literal translation of lazy rivers. But in traditional Chinese way of describing things, it means it means society, it means how do I explain? You know the Kung Fu movies, Kung Fu novels, which is like you have these different games, different. Well, it's like mafia. It's like the mafia, different mafias.
I can believe it. I mean, for us coming from the U.S., see all this Chinese high school comes to traffic and don't understand, right? So that's why I kind of came here and wanted to talk with you guys about it.
Yeah.
So now you're on deciding a search company, and that is Monkey King Search, right?
Monkey Search, yes.
Now, one of the reasons I wanted to talk with Nick about this is because one of the trends that I've noticed in China is you can build companies a lot cheaper than the U.S., you can effectively test a lot more concepts more quickly because there's such a big user population.
And more forgiving.
The
users are more forgiving.
There's two caches. One is obviously a big one in that you can't monetize China the way you can in the US right now. That could definitely change in time, but right now China is still a developing country. And then the second is that Chinese culturally is different. But I've been very intrigued with the idea that because this is such a petri dish of ideas that can be tested here, that ideas could ferment here that could be going over to the US. And business models here could be going over to the US and take over major US markets. And maybe you can tell us a little bit about your plans for your search company and that fits in what I just described.
Okay, since the end of last year, I started involving myself with a search company because that's always been my passion. I'm involved with this company called Wukong. Mm-hmm. It's called Monkey King Search in China because it's always been my passion to build a search engine.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe in doing something that will really help the people's lives. And I think search engines are as fundamental as water, as tap water.
Right.
So what we've been building before, like communities, like Gongzhong, which is really bad at services, mobile games, etc.
Mm-hmm.
These, I consider them as soft drinks, like Coke, Pepsi, iced tea.
Mm-hmm.
You can live without Coke, Pepsi, or iced tea, but you can't live without tap water.
Right.
And I think search engine, fundamentally, is as important to people's lives as tap water.
Right.
So that's why I'm doing it, and I want to make a difference in people's lives. And I say...
But a lot of people want to build search engines. I mean, Microsoft launched its latest iteration of search engine just a little while ago. Honestly, search engines aren't really that big of a deal anymore, and they're well understood and well monetized. I mean,
well, I think Larry said something that I totally agree with. People said that Google is great. Google's it's wonderful. Google's so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And Larry, I think he said that we're only at the beginning. We took the first baby steps toward our goal of artificial intelligence, which I totally agree. And people say that it's too late to start a search engine company. I said, it's not too late. And people have said that 10 years ago.
Right.
Google guys, it's too late to start a search engine
company. Yeah, search engine one. It's ultimately search number one.
Yeah. And they say it's too late to start a search engine company now. And I'm saying that it's not too late 10 years from now. You can do it 10 years from now. Because when people say that, oh, don't you have to follow the footsteps of Google and you have to take 10 years to build Google's quality today? I said, no. Don't have
Google had great quality in the beginning.
No, I'm saying that to Google's quality today,
right.
Do you need 10 years to build Google today? I think you don't have to, because you're standing on other people's shoulders.
Sure.
Innovation is also like that. So, and you use open source, Google's technology, which they have been utilizing and they have been successful with, is like such as MapReduce, such as GFS.
Right.
You can build something similar, open platform.
So, okay, I get that, but I mean,
so
I'll be very blunt though. There's a lot of people who have... a significantly bigger international profile and have a lot more resources than you.
That's
so they have tried to build search companies and they fall on their ass like a lot of times, like really badly.
That's right.
You're in China.
Mm-hmm.
Why would people use what you're doing?
Well,
and that's I'm on your side.
I'm saying that in China, I think a lot of people said this is a highly competitive field, the search engine business.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're wrong. It's not competitive at all. It's a very low competition level business.
Mm-hmm.
You understand why? Is that sometimes they say the most dangerous place is the safest place.
Mm-hmm.
You see, like, where you go hiding, right? People are searching for you, right? Sometimes it's the most dangerous place. It's the safest place to hide because nobody thinks that, wow, there's a tremendous opportunity there.
Mm.
And searching is that because so many people are afraid.
I can believe there's the opportunity. I mean, are you able to talk more specifically about what you're going to do?
Okay. So in China, in many industries, sectors on the internet, there's lots of public companies.
Mm-hmm.
And in the searching business, there's only one.
Baidu.
Baidu is the one public company on China.
Right.
I think this is too, the number is too small.
Right.
There should be at least another one.
Right.
That could go public.
Is your intent to just build a smaller competitive Baidu? I mean, your aspirations are a little bigger than that.
I believe I am bigger than that because I want to challenge Google in the United States.
So if you want to challenge Google,
I have to build a bank also. That's in the end.
And I'm sure
it can
be done.
What?
I'm sure it can be done. It's just, what is that?
I mean, what is that?
There's been wiki search, there's been all kinds of different stuff, and none of it's worked. Now it's real-time search, but is that really going to be more important?
No,
I don't think so.
No, I believe that the idea is conceptual search engine.
Mm-hmm.
You hear that talk a lot, but it's actually very difficult to do.
Is that something like...
it's not keyword searching, it's conceptual searching.
The one that just launched from Math...
similar, but we have different algorithms. The one that was recently launched, is the algorithm is too complex. We can do that as well. But if you take so many processing cycles to just serve one user...
Mm-hmm.
It's just not economical.
Mm-hmm.
And you go bankrupt because you can't make enough revenue off one search.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if you use the one million servers for Google to just serve one person, well, that's almost as smart as the matrix.
No, sure, there's a cost issue. And behind that is going to be the energy cost issue. I think
that's the issue. Yeah, it's a big one. Yeah, that's true. You're totally right. The human brain is actually so much more powerful than so many computers. And very efficient. We only take about 3,000 kcal a day.
So then let me ask you this. That search, I'm forgetting the name. Wolfram Alpha. What's the name of the search? Do you remember?
Yeah, I don't remember. I saw it on the internet. I saw the results. I'm saying that in research, you can do that.
But so let's say that they're using a high-cost version of it, and so therefore we'll assume it's a high-quality search.
Yeah.
I mean, I've used this search like three times and then I stopped using it. I've seen a couple of friends talk about it saying, hey, we should go and search there. For me, as a pretty active internet user, actually, let's say, extremely active internet user, I have no life, and I use the internet all day. Mm-hmm. I don't use it. And I'm pretty
good. It's not good enough.
So if theirs is the high-quality version that's using
which
high-cost,
the one
from Wolfram Alpha.
Is that one in... It's not Silicon Valley one, right?
No, they're in Chicago.
Yeah, I think it's a... is that one which they take all the history books and all?
It's only Silicon Valley. Wolfram Alpha right now. Hold on. There's one, like, big one.
Yeah. Google?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, if you do some search for Wolfram Alpha search.
Google is focused on the keyword, actually. Wolfram.
Wolfram. Alpha. Search.
That's one,
yeah.
I can't tell you how much search you need.
So the domain is
Wolfram Alpha.
So wolframalpha.com.
Yeah.
So this is the one you're talking about?
Yes, I think so. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So if this is a high quality version that uses a lot of computing resources and gives the best answers, and you're going to do it with less resources,
that's
you're going to give
lower quality answers, but as best as you can.
And so
basically, for example, if it seems like a solar car, right?
Uh-huh.
But it's not very economical. Although it goes very long distance, you know, you can only hold one guy. Like, yeah. I'm going to go to the car that's going to actually use it.
So I'm not using this right now, because
no.
I haven't found the answer to that. I mean, do you use it? We couldn't find it, so...
And only also very limited scope for this one. I tried it before. Very limited scope. Right. Only certain things you can answer. It's not generic. As in the sense that I can answer anything.
Mm-hmm.
I can give you the result as fast as I could.
This is stuff that's been tried for a long time. Like, Ask Jeeves was a kind of early one.
The technology wasn't good enough.
And I thought Wolfram Alpha is interesting because there clearly is something to it.
Yeah, absolutely. The algorithm is very good.
And I guess it's can you crack it and make it work?
That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to, my algorithms are different than theirs in that they use advanced algorithms, but it's very, very slow.
Mm-hmm.
We try to use simple algorithms, which are much faster. So like, this is why I explain. Instead of building a solar car, we're building a hybrid.
Mm-hmm.
It's very efficient, and it's good, it's very operational, and it's better than the one we had before. Is it a solar car? No. It doesn't use non-renewable energy? It does. But it uses less of it. You got what I mean?
Yeah, right.
That's what I'm trying to do. We're trying to build a better search engine, like a hybrid car. That's the impression that is.
So, I mean, how do you know that there's a market demand for this? Have you done things like let me go through this thing, and I'm really interested to hear
your point. From my point, I'm not sure how to do this.
No, not on that. On how do you know there's a market for it? Have you done things like made sample test results and shown those to users and said, hey, users, would you, if you got answers like this from a search engine, would this be bad for you than I do? Have you done things like how have you validated what you're doing?
I don't trust study groups. I don't trust surveys. Mm-hmm. I don't trust any of that. I believe, my personal belief, right, is that a true entrepreneur has to be the passion guy, the passion user.
Mm-hmm.
That's who I am. I'm building search engine for myself.
Right.
I feel currently the search engine sucks.
Right.
It doesn't solve my problems. I'm building the search engine for myself. And I believe if I feel this is a good search engine, people like it. That's how they say that when the talking to the output. I build the product for myself. I'm building for ourselves, my teammates, my employees.
Hmm.
So if we, I'm being average, I build things that's used by hundreds of millions of people in Chinatown, in Seoul, in Hongzhou. Hmm. Hundreds of millions of people use my products. So I pretty much know what the general population thinks. And I feel that currently the search engine sucks. That's why I'm doing this. I don't use study groups. I use myself.
Hmm.
And you have to be passionate. If you really believe your product sucks, you have to improve it.
And you might fall on your ass, or you might really make it work.
Yeah.
And that's
a risk. That's a risk. I feel like the Wright brothers.
Yeah. And so this time around, you're taking no funding. You're doing yourself.
Yeah, I'm self-funding this.
Are you going to self-fund all the way?
No, I'm going to be funding end of the year or next year. I'm probably going to be funding one round and hope for an IPO.
And so this, in terms of where Nick's office is at here, so in the university, we're in a building on the 19th floor. And what's interesting here is Nick's office is actually pretty expensive, obviously. It doesn't look like it. The university, it's just a nice university. But it actually looks like a... Run a Fight does a Silicon Valley startup where it's not like there is at all.
No, not true.
It feels like a startup, and it gives you the feeling like a hungry startup. Is that
so? And the guys I have on my team, most of them haven't made a lot of money on startups. But they have friends, and they have no people in China that have made a lot of money on startups. So that's why I have them here.
Right.
I want them to be very, very hungry.
Right.
Because if they're not hungry, if they have made money on a previous startups, then they wouldn't work as hard.
Right. Do you want to talk a little bit about, can you talk about the view you have from your office?
The view from my office, right outside my office, is Google, the Google building. And we're right on top of them.
So what floor are we on? What floor is Google on?
Let's see, you can count, right? Google is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9,
9
floors.
And we're on the 19th floor.
We're actually
10 floors above Google.
10 floors above Google. And I have binoculars here, which you can see Google. The entire Google's office building.
So Nick can see exactly what's going on. And this is it for Google China, right?
This is Google China. This is Google China building.
And they're right down there. Now, why are you so interested in Google rather than Baidu? Because it really is Baidu's 8% market share. Google's funny.
But Google has much better technology. And I really believe that search engines is a technology challenge. And there's actually two...
So you have a lot of time, but do might just go away?
No, there's a lot of companies who use this other strategy and does it very well. There's basically two strategies in building search engines. Mm-hmm. One is what I call the technology strategy. The other is what I call the human strategy.
Mm-hmm.
There's two streams. One stream is Google, which uses artificial intelligence, right? Machine learning, machine everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the other extreme, which is the... Neighbor. If you guys heard of Neighbor in Korea, it's a Google in Korea.
All right.
And it uses humans to produce the results of search engine.
Okay.
So all the results are human produced.
In real time?
Not in real time, but they just keep producing.
Right. It's produce. Like ask.com.
It's like ask.com, yeah. It's human produced search engine. Mm. So these are two streams, and we're more for the technology view. I believe in the future in artificial intelligence, in machine learning, I believe. Mm. Hopefully we'll build a great company and not building Skynet. But that's sometime I... We ponder that whether our system will kill Skynet.
And Skynet being...
In Terminator.
Do
you guys did you see the movie Terminator?
Yeah, a long time ago.
You didn't see the new ones?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so Skynet is this computer system which took over everything.
Oh, right.
So they build robots, which is really famous.
So now you can hear a little bit about Nick Ambition on this day.
And you know, Kongzhong.
Uh-huh.
Kongzhong Wang. Is Wang is net.
Mm-hmm.
Kongzhong means sky. So actually, the direct translation for Skynet is actually Kongzhong Wang in Chinese.
Hmm. Now, I'm interested to know, so obviously you're very optimistic, you're going to push this really hard.
Well, for entrepreneurs, you have to be very optimistic.
Of course. So I want to ask you, and if you don't answer this, it's not a problem, I just want to ask you anyway, at what point do you say it didn't work?
Because
you could personally fund this for as long as you want, pretty much, but you're not going to do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
At what point do you say we're not going to do it?
I think there's a word called perseverance,
mm-hmm.
and there's another word called stubborn.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know the difference?
Huh? I think the difference is the guys who are called geniuses are the ones that figure it out, I guess.
Let me tell you the difference.
All right, tell me.
Okay. With your goal,
mm-hmm.
your goal in life, your goal in your career, or whatever your goal, you have to be perseverance. You have to persevere. So just tell yourself, I have to reach my goal. There's a big point. There's no question. There's no stopping. I'm not stopping at anything. That's perseverance.
Mm-hmm.
And don't be stubborn on the way to get there.
So you
know what I mean is that, for example, your goal is somewhere else in distance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Distance mountain. I'm going to get to that point. I'm going to walk there. If there's a big wall, I can get to my destination.
Mm.
I go around it. Go around the wall. I try to get around the wall. Mm. If I can't get around the wall, I try to fly over it. If I can't fly over it, I dig a hole. So
you're
I can
you're not going to give up.
I'm not going to give up. I'm just going to find a way. Entrepreneurs find a way.
Mm.
That's perseverance. And just don't get stuck around how to get there. I see a lot of entrepreneurs fail because they want to succeed and they want to succeed in a certain way.
You're the way it takes.
I do whatever it takes. I don't have to succeed in one certain way.
Mm. What if that way involved you not being CEO of a company?
That's okay. That's fine.
You just want to get there.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay. That's I'm interested in some general... Firstly, China. Like, what's your level of Chinese?
I can speak and read.
Are you native Chinese?
I'm native Chinese, yeah.
So if you... So you're perfectly, I mean, your English is obviously native, your Chinese is
native,
so you can, and you can read and write Chinese as well?
I can write, I can read.
As native as well, or?
Native, I can read and native.
And
but I can't write like a foreigner who learns Chinese.
Okay. So
I can write some words.
So then your communications here then are on Chinese level, you don't have to have other people in the way.
No.
So how is, one of the things I've been hearing about in my time here in China is that management is a real problem. You can't scale up like you can in the US, people become very individualistic. There's almost like a cap on how big you can get companies. First, is that understanding correct or is that not correct?
I think it's a different in culture.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in Germany or if you're in Japan, it's very easy to scale very, very big because mm-hmm. it's a people's culture.
Mm-hmm.
Even German workers and Japanese workers, they're very similar and they're very alike. And they're like robots.
Mm-hmm.
They just toil away. And in China, people think a lot more.
You're right.
These guys, I mean, it's not as team-oriented as Japan or Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And it's even more... people are very creative here. right? People are very entrepreneurial here. More than...
But they're not team-oriented. That's exactly it. So,
that's
do you agree with my statement?
Yeah, yeah. So, but also, it just takes a lot more work. Could be done. It could be done. With the right manager, the right motivator, the right coach, if you align people's objectives with yours.
So middle management is the area that becomes a problem here, is that right? I mean, is that what happens?
In China, because people are very entrepreneurial, the head guy, the boss, has to be the smartest guy in the company. Mm-hmm. The most capable guy in the company. Otherwise, people leave you.
Right.
There's no way you can hire someone better than you.
No way.
So, for example, in marketing, say, the head guy has to be the smartest marketing guy in the company.
That can be relative, though. I mean,
it has to be. Otherwise, the guy will leave. Because it will be like, why should I work for this dumb guy? Why is he the boss? Why is that my profits and the stuff I earn? It's got some such a big cut by him. So, and in China, people think that way. So you have to be the smartest guy in the company.
So you don't think you can get guys here that are smarter than you to work with?
Sure, absolutely. In the US, you can. In China, you can't. No way. So 10 years? No way. You can get guys smarter than you to work.
So how many people have you got here now?
40.
40? How's the organization structure like? Do they all report to you? Do you have middle managers? Like, how does it look?
We actually have a very innovative way to manage here. Mm. We have what's called the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought something. We run a constitutional monarchy.
Mm-hmm.
There's certain things I decide. There's certain things the Senate decide.
Mm-hmm.
The Senate is a representation from the teams.
Mm-hmm.
So each 10 guys has one senator,
mm-hmm.
and the Senate decides on things such as budgeting, such as salaries and compensations.
Oh really?
Yes. Such as work division and reporting.
So everybody knows everyone's salaries or what?
No, the Senate doesn't everybody's salaries.
Mm-hmm.
No. The Senate takes on votes. And the hybrid.
Why are you doing it that way?
Because get more involved from the company, from the employees, so they feel part of the team. And certain things is decided by the whole body. So I actually learned this from the Swiss government. I don't know if you've been to Switzerland.
Yeah.
You know that Switzerland doesn't have a head of state.
I know that. In all of the little region,
you didn't know that. Switzerland doesn't have a head of state. It has a council. And in terms of foreign affairs, you know, traveling to overseas, it rotates. For example, this month is this guy, next month is that guy. Really? You didn't know that?
No, I know that.
You know that?
I actually know. I mean, I live in Europe.
Yeah, you can go there, and then you should see the council. There's about 20 guys.
I've never heard of a head of state from Switzerland. Like,
you've never heard of it, right? See?
Never heard of the president of Switzerland, the prime minister.
See? It's very interesting.
But I know I've always known it had a different democratic system.
It's a really different
bottom, like,
bottom-up, grassroots democratic system. And it works very well. And it used to be like, we were invited by the Swiss government to travel there a few years ago.
Mm.
And so we actually learned how the government works. It's that when Switzerland got founded, it's all the people, the mountaineers, which is the Swiss, meet in the valley, and they start voting on certain things. So they just take a handbook.
Hmm.
So it's what's called a direct democracy. That's how Switzerland was founded. And then, because the system got bigger, so it has to be a representative democracy, but they still want to keep the more power to the people.
Hmm.
So that's how it works here. And people feel they're really part of the team, because they have so much empowerment.
Hmm.
So we have a Senate, and we have direct voting by every employee.
Hmm.
So on certain issues like, when we go for our spring trip, how do we spend our team building budget? It's decided by the entire employee body. And on other things, it's decided by the Senate.
Have you done the
What is no.
So you're just trying it here. I mean, you have it working so fast.
Very well. People are very involved, and people are very happy that there's such empowerment.
Mm.
Because before, in any other type of company, right, any other company, it's a pyramid scheme, right? So it's like, who decides about salary and bonus?
Well,
it's your boss. It's your
employer. Even more so, right? You have to be kind of like a dictator at the top, is what I understand. So like a very strong control.
Yeah.
And so you're doing it very, very differently.
I'm doing it very, very differently. I'm doing a voting system here.
Mm. How's the retention been?
Very, very good. Very good.
Have you lost a lot of people, maybe?
No, I lost only one.
Mm. Okay. So the other thing I want to ask you about is, and tell me if this isn't something we can talk about, is just in terms of the future of China. In some of the reading I've been doing about China since I've been here, I've started to understand that China is one big country, but it's a little bit more like Europe in that there's a lot of ethnic regions and groups that are combined together into one country, and that it is something that is a little bit difficult to hold all of that together. And on top of that, China is not a democracy. It is a communist country. And almost one of the things that I'm understanding is that the Chinese are, because they're so entrepreneurial, one of the books I read said that there's almost no sense, there's a sense of right or wrong, but Chinese people just do what they want to do. And so you almost need to have a strong system in place so that Chinese people understand you do the wrong thing and there's consequences. And that's basically it. There's not this inbuilt code that a lot of other Western societies have where there's a kind of a feeling of right or wrong. Would you agree with what I said so far?
Not necessarily. I think it was right and wrong. I mean, there's general... In China, there's traditionally in China, there's let me say how it works. Okay, from the Chinese view, I've been to the States, I've been to China for a long time, so I can experience this probably better. In the US, people consider this three codes in China. There's only one code in the United States. In the United States, there's a code of law.
Mm-hmm.
Means that the code of law rules a man in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So if you did something that's wrong, but the police didn't use the proper procedures, you'd be like, oh, for example, the Miranda rights, for example, the O.E. Simpson case, mm-hmm. for example, the others.
Exactly.
So there's a code of law. So in China, traditionally, it has been three codes. The code of canon, the code of the country, mm-hmm. the code of law, which is the code of the country, right. and the code of emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, in China, for example, a woman kills kills her husband because her husband beats her alive.
Right.
Okay, in the United States, hey, what the law says, you punish. But in China, the law of emotion could let her get a very light punishment.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very wide scheme how right. judge can decide.
Mm-hmm.
And for example, there's no way, for example, like there's evidence that someone did something bad and the people are very angry, and there's no way this person's going to be let go easily. Although the police didn't use proper procedures, they use other procedures.
Right.
So you see what I mean, right? In China, it's more the three codes over China rather than just one in the U.S.
Mm.
So people have lots of emotion. Things work here. It's very important.
So
that's where relationships are more important here.
Right. So longer term, where do you see the future of business in China? I mean, I guess the question is hard for me to articulate this because I still don't have it completely clear. I'm still learning. It feels to me like China is working very hard to hold the whole entire country together. It's obviously a very, very, very important issue for China. If that would change, and China would become 20 different countries, and still united, but somehow become more independent, how would that change the entrepreneurial environment? Do you see that as any kind of likelihood, or is it something you shouldn't talk about?
I don't think it's something you should talk about, because that's right now we're in China, and there are certain codes and laws.
Okay. Sorry, so we'll leave that one down.
Because someone asked me this point, and said about government censorship,
mm-hmm.
you know, or laws regulations on content.
Right.
I'm saying that this is, any country has laws and regulations, and you just have to abide by them.
Exactly. Sorry, I should know now, so
okay.
I apologize. That's pretty much everything I want to ask. Is there anything that you want to talk about which you haven't covered?
I think it's good.
Okay.
What do you think?
Thanks for your time.
Thank you.